ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the 7th canto, 5th chapter, text number 23 and 24. Shravanam kirtanam vishnoh, smaranam padasevanam, archanam vandanam dasyam, sakhyam atmanivedanam, iti pumsarpita vishno, bhaktischa navalakshana, क्रियेत भगवत्यधा तन्मन्येधीतमोत्तमम्। सो आई एम गोइंग टू स्पीक ऑन वंदनम। सो आई रीड दैट सेक्शन फ्रॉम द पर्पोर्ट। ऑल्दो प्रेयर्स आर अ पार्ट ऑफ डीटी वर्शिप, दे मे बी कंसिडर्ड सेपरेटली लाइक द अदर आइटम्स सच एज हियरिंग एंड चैंटिंग, and therefore separate statements are given herewith. The Lord has unlimited transcendental qualities and opulences, and one who feels influenced by the Lord's qualities in various activities offers prayers to the Lord, and in this way he becomes successful. In this connection, the following are some of the offenses to be avoided: A. To offer obeisances on one hand, B. To offer obeisances with one's body covered, C. To show one's back to the deity, D. To offer obeisances on the left side of the deity, and E. To offer obeisances very near to the deity. Hare Krishna. So in the beginning, I would like to beg the blessings of all these advanced Vaishnavas who are here present for this Bhagavatam class. I pray for to all of them to bless me so that I can speak something of devotional inspiration. Hare Krishna. So today's topic is Vandanam, which means to offer prayers. So we can see in this storyline that Prahlad Maharaj is giving the process for devotional service. And one of the processes he's mentioning is to offer prayers. And we can see that in the life of Prahlad Maharaj, it's not that he's just speaking, but he's also doing. And we see that when he was tortured by Hiranyakashipu, he actually uses this as a principal element to protect him from all dangers himself. So he folds his hands and just worships the Lord and offers wonderful prayers to the Supreme Lord. And in that way he's rescued from all dangers. So we can see that this is a very, very potent method which is being prescribed by Prahlad Maharaj to overcome all obstacles in our lives on the progress of Krishna consciousness. So many dangers, but there was one tool which he used, that is to chant the prayers of the Lord. So I looked up the meaning of this word prayer in the dictionary, and it is said that it is the act of communicating with the deity for either petitioning him or in adoration, or as a thanksgiving, like that. So there are the, or in contrition. So these are the four ways how one communicates with the deity, in what different moods that one may communicate with the deity. So this is a very powerful process. And we can see in the Bhagavatam that also, if you see in the Vedic literatures, everything is about prayers. Krishna says, Brihat Sam Tatha Sam Nam. I am Brihat Sam amongst Samved, in the Samved, and Samved is full of prayers. And if you see, the Bhagavatam is also nothing but a compilation of prayers by wonderful devotees. Prahlad's prayers, Gajendra's prayers, you have so many prayers, Kunti's prayers. So it's all full of prayers. Also, Prabhupada used to like Kulashekara's prayers very much. So he translated that, even though he belongs to the South Indian Sampradaya, Sri Sampradaya. So you can find there's so much full of prayers. You know, the Vedas are full of prayers, prayers by the Vedas. And finally the Bhagavatam ends with the topmost prayer offered by the gopis, the Gopi Geet. You can see that prayer is such an important part of our Vaishnav life. Also in our daily sadhana, it begins with prayers. Early in the morning we start our day with offering prayers to the spiritual master. We offer prayers. So prayer begins with offering our respects to the spiritual master. And it ends with offering prayers to the Vaishnavas. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. So it begins with the devotee and ends with the devotee. So much about prayers. Also we can see that the Vaishnava Acharyas have expressed their hearts in the form of songs, which are nothing but again prayers. The Vaishnava songs are also prayers. So much prayers. Actually, many times we may take it for granted, these things, without understanding what is the potency of prayers. Prayers are actually very, 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 very powerful. In fact, Bhakti Tirth Maharaj, he writes in his book, Black Lotus, that what made him become a believer in God? He was not very sure God exists or not. So he tells a story in his book, Black Lotus. He had a spiritual mentor whose name was Vivian Dubose, a lady who was very, very spiritual by nature. She was a Christian lady. And she used to cultivate some children and give them guidance in Krishna, in Christianity, in prayer sessions and things like that. So Bhaktivedanta Maharaj writes in his book that once they organized a prayer session where there were about 15 boys who came together. And generally, that was all the strength. Sometimes more people would come, sometimes less. But around 15 small kids would come together and would practice prayers. And this lady would constantly speak to Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj about the importance of prayer and how powerful these prayers are in transforming and causing miracles. Because even in the Christian tradition, they very strongly believe that, you know, Jesus performed these miracles. But it doesn't end there. Even today, if you strongly believe in Jesus and if you put a very strong, ardent prayer to Him, then you can actually see miracles taking place. So she would constantly speak about the miracles that would take place through chanting of prayers. So one such thing which took place, which Bhaktivedanta Maharaj says that has brought about an amazing transformation in his life when he saw this miracle take place. So what happened was, these boys came together. And there was this new boy who came in their assembly and he had a withered hand. He had a short hand, handicapped person. And they were all to pray for this person. And he was standing there amongst all of these boys. And he was also there, Maharaj. And they were told to ardently, fervently, with full devotion, intensely pray that this miracle would take place and he would become healed of his situation. So they all started praying, and Maharaj writes in his book that in front of the eyes of these people, in front of the eyes of all these children, in front of Maharaj's eyes, he actually saw this boy, you know, his withered hand growing back into its normal shape. In front of everyone. He actually saw that growing into its normal shape. When he saw that happening right in front of his eyes, you know, he became a firm believer that there is something like God. And there's something so powerful, process like a prayer. It can work. That incident became a very key incident, a very, very important incident in his life, which brought about that transformation in his life. And not only that, there were two incidents which he writes about. Another one, lady who was blind. And she was not present there. So she was, that lady, her preacher, the mentor, told all these boys that we should now pray for this lady. They had only seen this lady once and she was blind. And they were told that you should pray for her, that she should get her eyes back. And she was somewhere in her house and she was also praying, and there was a time allotted when all these boys were also supposed to pray and she would also be praying. And they all started praying intensely. And it is explained, he writes, that after some time, these children started seeing visions of this lady. Just like you see on television. Yeah? And they could actually see this lady opening the closet, taking out something, putting inside. And after some time, some of the children actually saw that this lady get her eyes back. And she's so amazed about it. She was thinking, oh my, I've got my eyes back. And she was so like excited about it. And she was not knowing what to do. She was like, she was calling up her relatives. And this is all being seen by the children who are in that room. When that lady is nowhere in that room. So now this could be an illusion. This could be a mass illusion, isn't it? So what the children do, they come and share their realizations. And the realizations are having a lot of similarities. So if there are similarities, that cannot be, you know, an illusion, isn't it? It cannot be false. So they all went to this counselor and they told her that, you know, this is what we saw. We saw that this lady has got her eyes back and we saw these visions and we all have tallied and it is all the same. So she was thinking maybe these kids are telling lies or something, or maybe just some ballooning or something like that. So she wanted to confirm. So she called up this lady. And this lady actually testified that, yes, I've got my eyes back. I can actually see. So this, in our television program or in a radio program, this counselor, this lady, she actually called this blind lady who was initially blind, and she told her to speak about her realizations. And she said that, yes, you know, God has been so merciful on me that he gave my eyes back, like that. So we can see that prayer is a very, very, very powerful force. You know, if we have that faith, then we can actually use our sadhana more seriously. We can take it more seriously because most of our sadhana is all about prayers, isn't it? And everything about a prayer, even the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is a prayer, actually, for that matter. And the culmination of our devotional practice is what? To pray. As Brahma says in that verse, Tatte anukampa susumikshamano bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam. Ridva gaburbir vidara namaste jive tuyo mukti padesadaya bhak. That actually the culmination of devotional service, of sadhana, is what? When you are faced with the greatest of calamities and at that time when you fold your hands and you pray to God and you tell Him that, oh Lord, I actually deserve worse, but it is You who has actually been very merciful to me. So please kindly deliver me. When you put in such a prayer in the most of difficult times, is a success actually of all the sadhana. And actually at that time a person becomes eligible for the mercy of the Lord. It is to pray in a humble spirit. So we will take some stories from the scriptures which more better illustrate this principle. We can see in Jagannath Puri, there is a wonderful story which actually took place. It's a historical incident which took place about one lady whose name was Padma. And this lady, she was, she used to sell vegetables and she had a field. And she had a brinjal field. So she was plucking brinjals. Now she somehow had the habit of chanting Jayadev Goswami's songs, prayers. So she was chanting. This was outside Jagannath Puri. So Lord Jagannath loves the prayers of Jayadev Goswami so much that it is explained that the Lord Jagannath actually went out of the altar and was standing behind this lady while she was plucking the brinjals from her field. So as she was plucking and moving, Lord Jagannath was also walking behind this lady. So while she was going, because brinjals have thorns, so Lord Jagannath's clothes got torn on those crops, brinjal crops. And part of his uttari, his top cloth, got stuck on the brinjal crop field. So the next day when the pujaris opened the altar, they saw that the Lord's clothes were all tattered. So this was taken very seriously. What is happening? So they went to the king and reported to the king and said that this is what has happened. We don't know what happened, but in the morning we saw that all the Lord's clothes were tattered. What's happening? So the king thought that there is some kind of big offense which was committed towards deity. So he immediately started performing austerities, fasting and doing a lot of pujas and things like that in order to counteract the offense, and started praying ardently to the Lord, please forgive us because we have committed such a great offense. Something happened and your clothes have been mutilated like this, please forgive us. And subsequently, the Lord appears in the dream of this king and tells this king that don't worry, there's nothing to fear. There's no offense has been committed by any of the pujaris or you. Actually, what has happened was that this lady was chanting Jayadev Goswami's songs. And what to do? I'm so madly attracted by Jayadev Goswami's prayers. And not only that, this lady has been singing with so much of devotion that I could not help myself but go to that field and listen to her sweet singing. And while I was walking through the fields, my clothes got torn, so it is not your fault. So if it is possible for you to call that lady and make her chant prayers for me, I would be very pleased. So the king immediately he woke up and made those arrangements in order to find that lady and get her to Jagannath Puri. And when they found out that lady and went to that field, they actually found the upper cloth of Lord Jagannath in the field, stuck on the bangan crop at that place, lady's field, which was actually the proof that Jagannath had been there. And they fell at the feet of this lady, the king fell at the feet and begged her that you please come to Jagannath Puri. We will make all arrangements for your whole family to stay there. There won't be any problems. All you will do is just sing the prayers of Jayadev Goswami for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath. And she agreed. And even today, before the Lord goes to sleep, the prayers of Jayadev Goswami are sung for the Lord's pleasure. It is a tradition now in Jagannath Puri. So it is a true story which took place, which is two incidents, history actually took place. So we can see that the prayers can be offered. It's a way of communication to the, with the Lord by way of petition or by way of contrition or adoration or thanksgiving. But what is the best form of offering prayers? Is when you do it out of love and devotion for the Lord, out of intense prayer, out of intense love for the Lord. But the other way of offering prayers is when you are in danger. And we can see that there are incidences in the Bhagavatam. Like there is a story of Uttara in the Mahabharata. There is a story that after the battlefield of Kurukshetra was fought, all the soldiers were dead and only the Pandavas were living. And at that time Uttara was pregnant. So at that time, Ashwatthama, he releases the Brahmastra in order to kill the embryo within the womb of Uttara. So seeing the Brahmastra coming at her womb, Uttara, she comes to Krishna and petitions the Lord for protection. And she says, Pahi Pahi Mahayogins, Deva Deva Jagatpate. She's praying that, O Lord of the universe, who else but you can save me? Protect me, protect me, protect me. So actually this may seem like a prayer which is selfishly motivated, where she's praying to the Lord that please protect me, protect me. But in the subsequent verse, it is evident that she's not actually praying for herself. She's praying for the protection of the womb within the child within her womb. So she's saying that she doesn't mind dying, but she's concerned about the child in the womb, because actually if you see Mahabharata, you know, her husband was Abhimanyu, who was killed in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So by the tradition, she should actually be dead also, because she should take sati. She should jump into the burning pyre of her husband. So she should also be dead. But she's not dead. Why? Because she was pregnant. And for a lady who's pregnant, it is her responsibility to live for the sake of her child. So she was just simply living for the sake of her child. So her prayer was not for her own protection, but it was for the protection of her embryo. So she's praying to Krishna that, please protect me, protect my child, protect my embryo. So Krishna is standing on the chariot, nothing apparently seeming to happen, but he enters into the embryo and protects Parikshit Maharaj by his own energy. So we can see that this is the power of prayer. Now it is also noteworthy to find that actually, if you read the Srimad Bhagavatam, that it was not just one Brahmastra which was thrown, but six Brahmastra which were thrown 5 for the Pandavas and 1 for Abhimanyu. But none of the Pandavas offered any prayers to Lord Krishna. And all of them were saved. How is that? How are the Pandavas saved? So it is explained that for a devotee who is completely surrendered, like those of the Pandavas, there is no need to offer prayer also. At such an exalted state, it is not undermining the power of prayer. But that is a wonderful quality of surrender. Just like there is a small child and the child is in danger. Will the mother expect that the child will now come to her and, you know, say that, "Mommy, please protect me, I'm in danger"? No. Even before the child realizes that there is danger, the mother will make all arrangements to protect the child. That is the nature of devotional service. So similarly, we can see that the Pandavas are always protected by the Lord, even before offering prayers. And we can see in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, there are so many dangers coming to the Pandavas, but the Lord always protected them. It's not that individually every time Krishna and Arjuna was begging for and offering prayers. It's not like that. Just like, you know, the story of Bhagadatta. Bhagadatta had one weapon which he had exclusively maintained, sustained for the sake of killing Arjuna. And that day he had vowed that he will kill Arjuna. And he was spotting Arjuna only. And Krishna knew that. But Krishna was ensuring that Arjuna never comes in front of Bhagadatta. But somehow or another, Bhagadatta identifies Arjuna and comes right in front of his chariot. And takes out that weapon which he had reserved for him. Takes him and is about to shoot. When Krishna takes out his chariot from his vision. And takes him from one place to another. And dodges, keeps dodging Arjuna. And Bhagadatta is trying his best to try to take aim to shoot his arrow, but every time Krishna, being such an expert chariot driver, would always, you know, take him from one place to another, one place to another, one place to another. So he could never actually aim on Arjuna. Now Bhagadatta had received a benediction that the weapon that he would use would certainly kill the target. That benediction was given to him to work once only. But there was a condition. That arrow should be used only towards that person who is ready for battle, armed to fight. So he was ready to fight and shoot at Arjuna. But he got so frustrated with Krishna because he was taking the chariot from one place to another that he thought, this person who is causing trouble is this Krishna and I should kill him first. So he forgot that he was having that weapon probably, and he shot that weapon on Krishna. So it went towards Krishna, but because that condition was that he should only shoot person who is ready to fight, because Krishna had taken a vow he would not fight. So that arrow went towards Krishna and just rebounded back with double force and went towards him and killed him only. So we can see that it was not that Arjuna was, you know, standing and offering prayers to Krishna all the while for protection, but he was so surrendered. By dint of his surrender, Krishna was always protecting him. So we can see that this is a very necessary and sufficient condition for offering prayers, is surrender. Because there is no surrender, then actually there is no meaning of a prayer. Therefore, it is a very important constitution. Therefore, by definition, there has to be a deity, there has to be a person who is offering prayers. Just like there was a man who came to a temple and he was ardently praying to the Lord. He was, you know, shaking his head, and so someone saw him, he's offering so much of worship. Let me go and ask him that who's he, and, you know, from where has he come? So he was asked, "Where have you come from? You're such a nice devotee." So he said, No, I'm so happy. I'm so happy to see that you are worshipping me with so much of love and devotion." So the devotee was amazed. He said, "What? What did you say? I'm so happy to see that you're worshipping me with so much love and devotion on the altar. Thank you so much." So this is not prayer. There has to be a devotee, there has to be a deity by definition. This is a very important constituent. If there is, you are offering prayers to yourself, that's ahangra upasana, it has no meaning actually. So there has to be a deity, there has to be a devotee. And there has to be humility, there has to be surrender. Then actually prayer has meaning. Otherwise prayer has no meaning. And we can see in the Bhagavatam, various examples of devotees offering prayers in various situations. Right from a person who is in difficulty, right to the example of devotees who are in pure love with the Lord. Then prayers offered by animals like Gajendra and deers. When Bharat Maharaj was in the form of a deer, to greatest of the living entities, human beings, Brahma, greatest of the intelligent human beings. So we can find prayers being offered by all kinds of people in all situations. Right? So this is but the principal element we can find is that there has to be surrender. It's a very, very important constituent. You can find that once, even in the life of Srila Prabhupada, when Srila Prabhupada was instructing some of his disciples, he said that lust cannot touch me, Maya cannot touch me. And correspondingly, Srila Prabhupada was once standing in front of the altar and he was ardently and fervently praying to the Lord. So some of his disciples went to Prabhupada and asked him that, what were you praying to the Lord? And he said, I was praying so that I can be always protected from Maya, that I can never fall down into Maya. So the disciple said, Prabhupada, do you also have to pray to the Lord? He said, of course I have to pray to the Lord. Of course. That's how I stay away from Maya. So therefore, it is a very important part of a life of a devotee, is to constantly offer prayers to the Lord, that we never fall into Maya. This is a very important, also in a letter Srila Prabhupada wrote to his disciples, that Maya cannot touch me. Maya cannot touch me. But I am feeling so weak and I am afraid that I may die. But I want to live. Why? Because if I die now, my mission will be left incomplete. So for the sake of the mission of Lord Chaitanya, I want to live on. So he wrote to his disciples and he called for medicines, Ayurvedic medicines. So therefore, the very principal element of service and surrender to Krishna is a very important criteria. You know, there are so many people who are going to the temples. They're going, they're praying. Even I remember when I was young, my friend who used to never go to the temple, once he was having a plate, coconut, garland, and he was going somewhere. So I said, where are you going? My mother told me to go to the temple. I said, really? Why? Exams are coming near, you know, so she's telling me to go to the temple. I said, sure. And he had such a sulken face, and he was so morose, so disappointed, but his mother was... So at that time I thought, how nice, his mother is trying to inculcate some good spiritual values in the son. And you find also, like parents telling a children, Beta, did you pray today? He said, yeah, yeah, okay, what did you pray? And the son will say, you know, I prayed so that I get a nice bicycle. And the mother will say, very nice, so sweet. And then, you know, son will go to sleep. Something like that, you know. It happens. So they are encouraged. But actually there is nothing so sweet about praying to the Lord for a bicycle or for good marks or for all these things. This is not actually what is prayer. Because the Lord knows what we want. So what we should be effectively praying for is service, pure devotional service. That is a very important prayer. That should be our mood when we pray. You know, I don't know, I heard it from some devotees, some anecdote about one small child who goes to the temple and he had just recently learned numbers and ABCDs. So he started taking out his book and started reading out the ABCD in front of the Lord. So the pujari comes and he says, what are you doing? So he was reading out A, B, C, D, E, F, G in front of the Lord. So pujari said, what are you doing? You're coming to the temple to read this ABCDs. Get out from here. And told that boy to go away. So in the night, this pujari gets a dream. The Lord comes to him and he says, all your services are also ritualistic. Your prayers and all your part puja is also nothing but ABCDs only for me. And he realized that yes, in one sense, if there is no devotion, then all the prayers are, what are they constituted of? ABCDs only ultimately. Numbers and ABCDs. Isn't it? So actually, if there is no devotion and if there is no love, then all prayers are nothing but A, B, C, D, Z, F, G. Doesn't make sense. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's all. So the real constituent of a prayer is devotion, ultimately. Otherwise, it's all A, B, C, D's. And in fact, Lord said that that boy's ABCD gave more pleasure to me than your, you know, wonderfully composed ritualistic recitation of prayers. It's not very pleasing. In fact, some devotee was telling that there is a section in the Bhagavatam called as the prayers offered by the Vedas. Now the Vedas are offering prayers. Vedas personified. You can imagine the perfection of the language, and you know, it's perfect. Vedas personified are offering prayers to the Lord. But the Lord went to sleep when he heard those prayers. He heard, said, because ultimately ritual and awe and reverence is not so much pleasing to the Lord than pure devotional service, than love, pure love, conjugal love. The Lord is pleased by devotion. And we can see that. So therefore, we can see there are so many examples in the Shastras also, like Ravana. In the Ramayana, there is a story about a great Brahman whose name was Vishravas. And this Vishravas, he was a grandson of Brahma, great Brahman. And he had 5 sons and 1 daughter. Who were the 5 sons? Ravan, Kumbhakarna, Vibhishan, Khardushan, and Surpanaka. So when he got his sons, he told his sons should go perform austerities and please the Lord and get some benediction. And they were all offering prayers, tapasya, austerities. And finally, the Lord appeared and asked, what do you want? And you know what they asked for. Benedictions which are so asuric. And Kumbhakarna asked for something like, Nityatvam, I want Nityatvam, I want to be eternal. But that was his desire, but when he chanted that word, the demigod sat on his tongue because he was so powerful. If he would have become eternal, he would have probably destroyed the whole universe. So Goddess Saraswati changed and twisted his tongue, and what came out was Nidratvam. He asked for benediction to go to sleep. So you see, what can be the motivation? If the motivation is wrong, then prayer can be very disgusting actually. So Brahma was utterly disgusted by these people's prayers. Even the demigods are disgusted when one prays for anything but pure devotional service. And Vibhishan, Brahma, what do you want? Vibhishan says, I want nothing but pure devotional service unto Sri Ram. So this is what happens. We can see that once in the life of Ravan, Narada was walking. And he calls her to Narada. He says, Narada, come here. So Narada thinks that why should I be the cause of trouble? So let me go. So Ravan begs at his feet and offers prayers to him, saying that please teach me the meaning of Om. So Narada says, look, the condition is not right. So I cannot tell you right now. It is not possible. So I need to go. So he says, what is this? Don't you know? Who am I? I am Ravan. I am expert at chanting Sanskrit mantras. In fact, in the Ramayana it is explained that Ravan was such an expert at chanting mantras that even the demigods would come down to him and request him to come to heaven to chant mantras and become a Purohit for their yajnas. He was so perfect in chanting mantras. In fact, he would chant mantras so beautifully that the demigods would become appalled by his chanting. And it is explained that Brahma once was chanting and doing yajna. He was chanting yajna so beautifully, the mantras, that Indra was so appalled that he had to come and appear. So at that time Brahma came to him and he said, don't appear now, it is not good, not a good time. So Indra said, no, I have to go. He is chanting so beautifully. So alright, you go, but don't take your wife along with you. Man without his wife is only half. How can I not go without her? I must go. So he takes his wife also along with him. And as soon as Agni appears with his wife, Ravan sees his wife, gets attracted and kidnaps her and goes away. And Indra is calling out Ravana, don't take my wife, don't kidnap my wife, don't do that. So much for wonderful offering prayers in eloquent Sanskrit. So this Brahma comes to Narada and offering prayers. And he's saying, please teach me Om. So he says, I cannot. And he says, you can see this weapon of mine? This is called a Chandrahas. If I just command this sword to kill anyone, it will follow that person in any part of the creation and kill him. Aren't you afraid of death? He's telling Narada. I don't know, probably this is the first incident, probably, or one of the incidences, where an inferior is trying to instruct his superior in what he should be doing, or trying to force out knowledge. So Narada says, sorry, but you know, whatever condition may be, I cannot explain this to you. So Ravan takes his Chandrahas sword and slashes Narada. But he finds that the sword just goes through right through him and nothing happens to him. And Narada is still standing there smiling. And he left, right, center, and he's wondering that nothing is happening to Narada. And Ravan immediately becomes humble. And he's understood that Narada is far more powerful than him. He immediately falls at his feet and offers prayers to Narada. And he says, oh great sage, you are so wonderful. You are so super excellent. You are so powerful. I offer prayers unto you. And he says, what is the secret of your strength? How is it that you have become so powerful? So Narada explains, even you are eternal, but you have not realized your eternal position. I am having a spiritual body. And the only thing you have to do is surrender to Vishnu. Surrender to the Lord and you can become also spiritual. You can also enter into the eternal realm. So he becomes so disgusted on hearing Lord Vishnu's name that he says, get away from here. I don't want to hear anything about you or your spiritual body or techniques to become eternal. So much for the wrong motivation to offer prayers. So there are various such examples in the Shastras. One such example comes to my mind from the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of a person who was a Bengali poet. And he came to Bhagavan Acharya and he said that I have wonderful poetry which I want to offer to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So please, can you hear it? So Bhagavan Acharya said, all right. So he was a Sanskrit scholar, so he started offering that prayers to him and started chanting the prayers. So Bhagavan Acharya was so appalled. He says, amazing, amazing, how wonderful, excellent. What I will do is I will speak to Swarup Damodar and I will request him to offer these prayers to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because it was the arrangement that anyone who has to offer anything to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu first goes through Swarup Damodar. So Bhagavan Acharya requested Swarup Damodar. So Swarup Damodar said, look, these Sanskrit scholars and all these people are actually, they are not devotees. And the poetry that they compose, the prayers they compose are actually very hodgepodge. And they have a lot of intersection of rasas. And they are rasabhas, they cause rasabhas. I don't want to hear these prayers. So Bhagavan Acharya says, no, you should hear. It's very good, I've heard it and it's very nice. For once you hear it, and if you don't like it, forget it. But hear it once. So he appeals to Swarup Damodar. So after long appeals, many appeals, Swarup Damodar said, all right, bring him. So the Bengali poet comes and all the devotees assemble and Swarup Damodar sits there and he hears the poetry. So the Bengali poet is offering his prayers. So he offers his prayers. So I'll read out the paraphrase of his prayers. So he's praying. He's praying. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has assumed a golden complexion and has become the soul of the body named Lord Jagannath, whose blooming lotus eyes are widely expanded. Thus he has appeared in Neelachal and has brought dull matter to life. May that Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya bestow upon you all good fortune. So everyone starts praising. Wow, what poetry, amazing. This has never been composed before. Excellent, excellent, super excellent. But Swarup Damodar is very disgusted. And he's thinking, what is this? And he says to Bhagavan Acharya, he says to this Bengali poet that what you have said is complete blasphemy. This is blasphemy? How is that? He says that you have compared, you are saying that Lord Jagannath is the body and the Supreme Lord is like the soul. You have compared the Supreme Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to the spark, infinitesimal spark, a soul. When the Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is infinite, it's a great offense. Not only that, you have compared Jagannath to the body. What is the body made up of? It is dead matter. How can you compare a spiritual transcendental body of the Supreme Lord with the dead matter of this world? This is a great offense. You should not have done this. So, and he said, picked out various faults from the poems of. So he said, you have also made a difference between Lord Jagannath. He said that Lord Jagannath is stationary and Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu is moving. This is an offense. You have made a difference between Jagannath and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and actually they are the one and the same. So he said, because of this, you are not going to make any spiritual tangible progress. You have only made this as your intention has been blasphemous. So Swarup Damodar wanted to tell him that as long as you are not a devotee, you are not lived in the association of devotees, you are not taken shelter of devotees, you are not surrendered your life, what prayers we may offer could actually be blasphemous, could actually be ways of either getting attention, either blaspheming the Lord, that also could be. So therefore this is not encouraged by Swarup Damodar. And then he gave the right purport. He said, even though you offered these prayers, but actually Lakshmiji intended something else. And then he gave the right understanding of the prayers which he had offered. So we can understand that what is very important is that is the right attitude, humility while offering prayers. While leading a life of surrender, only then can we offer correct prayers. It's very important. Because we can see that in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, he made those people who were born in very low families, like Ramananda Rai, who was born in a Shudra family and who was a Grahastha. Why? And he sent Pradyumna Mishra, who was born in a Brahmin family, and he was told to go to Ramananda Rai to hear transcendental messages, instructions from him. Why? In order to humble those who are born in aristocratic families. And to humble the renunciates, because Ramananda Rai was a Grahastha. Then he took Haridas Thakur, who was born in a Mlech family, a Muslim family, and made him the Namacharya. Why? To humble those who were again born in aristocratic families. Then Rupa and Sanatan, who had lost their caste because they had worked for Yavanas, and made them as important acharyas to write important Goswami literatures. That's a very important element of devotional service, is surrender and humility, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed is the most important principle in offering prayers. So in conclusion, we can say that the most important prayer is what? Is to chant the holy names of God, which is also a prayer for service of the Supreme Lord. And if we offer this prayer in the humble submission and humility and surrender, then that is more than sufficient in perfecting our lives. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanande, Hari Hari Bol.